I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. I am delighted to have, sitting across the table from me, Dave Trout on Faith Conversations this week. Now, Dave and I go way back. Not that I'm old, or not that he's old, but we go way back. I'll talk about that in a minute. But I have to say, and really what I need is some kind of a musical instrument here, but it's too late. I was not prepared. This is episode 40, so it's one little milestone in the podcast. So, Dave, you're on episode 40.
That's good.
How many episodes? So, all right, as we will get into this, you are a podcaster as well.
Yep.
And you are a podcaster. Your podcast is called, well, is it called Radar Radio or Under the Radar?
Under the Radar is what we, that's what the you name call of it is. Podcast. But radarradio.net would be our website address. And actually, Radar Radio is our official business name.
Oh, nice.
So,
nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So how many podcasts have you put out?
We just released our 351st.
I got a ways to go. That's great.
You're
love
getting
it.
There.
I'm moving there. Yeah. Slow but sure. Emphasis on slow. Of course, you know, you release one a week, which that's about what you do too, right?
Yeah,
it's pretty standard
for
a lot of podcasters, right?
Yeah.
So Dave and I, we go way back to the days of Moody Radio many years ago. We worked together. Dave left Moody Radio long before I did and worked in a couple of other places before launching out on your own.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I left Moody Radio, went to a place called Back to God Ministries, and actually while I was there, they were in the process of launching new radio shows, and I immediately thought, well, we should be doing something with music. Because music is my thing.
Yes,
I love.
You used to host music, a cool music show
on
Moody.
On Moody, mm-hmm. and it's just always been a part of my life. And so, but we weren't doing anything in music ministry as far as this radio organization. And so I came up with this idea for Under the Radar.
Entrepreneurial Dave Trout comes up with this great idea.
It was about 6 months into the job at the new place. And I threw a pitch out there. They said, well, it doesn't cost a lot of money to put together, so let's give it a try. We pitched it to some radio station friends of mine, most of them from the Moody days.
Yeah.
And a lot of them said, yeah, we would air this if you produced it. And by my 1 year anniversary, the show was on the air, ready to go. So that was, you know, getting close to 8 years ago.
Wow. And then you launched out on your own and took Radar Radio and Under the Radar with you as you left that organization.
Yeah. So a couple years ago, Under the Radar became its own independent nonprofit organization. So we're officially a 501c3.
All right.
And we're just kind of doing the slow and steady path of, you know, raising support from people that have already been blessed by it or mm-hmm. been affected by it. And are now just doing it independently.
And so, you know, the person that's listening today, and, you know, we haven't even gotten into the heart of our content, or we haven't even scratched the surface yet, but, you know, they're wondering, well, what do people support when they're supporting Under the Radar?
Right. Yeah.
What are you all about?
Yeah. Well, I'm all about connecting audiences and artists that have a discerning ear and want to have a soul connection with their music, and artists that are really underappreciated, underplayed, are pouring themselves into their craft and need some champions to get behind them and cheerleaders to be on their side. Well, that's where we want to be. We want to offer a platform where these audiences and artists can connect and we can just be a matchmaker.
Mm. I love that. That's great. And you have been such a champion for so many. I know one of your friends and folks that are involved with Under the Radar, I interviewed not all that long ago, the Gray Havens.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
You've known them for a number of years, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned about them right as they were launching, mm-hmm. did their very first radio interview.
Oh, I love it.
there's a few artists, All Sons and Daughters. And there's a few artists where I was their very first radio interview.
Nice.
We love kind of finding and discovering folks sometimes right as they're getting going.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So that's one of the fun things that you get to hear if you listen to Dave's podcast. You might hear some, you know, newly discovered talent and get in on some folks starting out on the ground floor and just launching their music careers.
Yeah. That's my hope.
Yeah. Well, you've done a lot of good interviews through the years. I've heard a number of them, and some of our musical tastes are the same, or at least tastes in certain friends that perform music. I'm thinking of Andrew Peterson, has been a longtime friend of yours as well as mine.
Yeah.
And he was one of the earlier podcasts that I did last fall in November. And I look forward to doing some other music podcasts. That's not the majority of what I do. That is the majority of what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We love giving people the heart behind the music. Mm-hmm. And so there's no better way to do that than to talk to the artists themselves, ask them, you know, what went into the album, what went into the songs. And as there's this magical power that happens with story.
Yes.
And you start to lean in to people when you start learning their story. So, and that's one reason why I love your podcast, because you're all about kind of discovering people's stories. And I find myself, whether I connect, whether my circumstances in life connect with them or not, you know, like, I don't own a pug and my house didn't get burned down, but you find yourself leaning into that story and learning and growing through it. So I think that's the magical power that art and even a platform like this has.
I agree. Yeah. Well, you and I talked a little bit before we pressed the record button. We emailed back and forth, and because we both come from the musical side of the fence, and I'll, for those here at Faith Conversations who don't know, my early years in radio were spent as a music director, and also I did live production of large-scale radio events, largely musical events, and so cut my eye teeth in the musical realm, and then actually, wow, I almost forgot this, released an album of my own. Wow. Did you know that, Dave?
I think I might have known that.
In 1988.
Wow.
Okay, so that was right at the beginning of, that was the first year CDs came out.
Yeah.
So I had a choice. Do I press, besides cassettes, which I did, do I do a CD or an LP?
Yeah.
And I decided to take a chance because Christian radio stations were a little slower to, at that point, to you know, they hadn't grabbed onto the new technology. It cost money to get the equipment and all that.
Yeah.
But I decided to do CDs and not old LPs. And because of that decision, I got a lot of the more contemporary stations to play my album, and I actually ended up on the top 25 CCM chart. I was between Michael W. Smith and Kim Hill.
Wow, that's good company.
Couple of weeks, you know, that's all I managed.
Hey. You know,
makes me laugh.
That's all
now.
It takes sometimes.
Yeah, there you go. So the album was called Joy in the Journey. I need to
dust
as embarrassing as it might be, I need to get it up on iTunes just for people's amusement
should.
And amazement.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're, well, I haven't told my audience that I resigned from my job. So I was going to say, so when you've resigned from your job, you'll take any income stream, basically.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so you and I come from musical roots, and I thought it would be certainly interesting because I wanted folks to learn about who you were, what you were all about at Under the Radar, and how you interfaced with artists. But you know, listened to some of my podcasts and ascertained a bit of a theme that I do fall into with the podcast, talking about faith life and faith shifts and things like that. And so you suggested talking about even musical faith transitions.
Mm.
And even, in fact, you know, what do you do when the Christian radio music you listen to and depend on, okay, doesn't connect with you anymore, doesn't connect with your soul anymore? That's a big, big question. And I'm going to take this back and maybe launch us in this way. I wouldn't have put those words to it. Those words that you put to it were really helpful, posing that question. And I think there are a number of people listening, would be my guess, that relate. They're not tuning in to the typical, maybe Christian radio station musically that that they used to. They're not, and they might even find some great food and fodder for soul connection in a number of secular songs. So back in my Moody Radio days, I hosted a program called Midday Connection, and we would do a show every Friday called The Milrose Club. And often our last segment would be one of us, four women around the table, not always women, but most of the time, would bring a song. we would play it, then we would discuss it. Mm-hmm. It was not always a Christian song, mm-hmm. but lyrically something that was very thought-provoking. Mm-hmm. We would sometimes take a lot of heat for that.
Sure.
And which I guess doesn't surprise you.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Totally.
It shocked me. I guess it just surprised me because I thought, okay, we're just playing something that is resonating with us around this table.
Yeah.
I sort of assumed it would with other people as well. And not that it didn't, but the rub seemed to be, oh, but that's a secular song, or that's not a popular song that everybody knows, or whatever. Fill in the blank.
Yeah.
But it was something that was feeding my soul, or someone who brought that to the table's soul.
Yeah.
And so enter that conversation that what happens when the stuff you used to listen to just doesn't seem to be hitting the mark anymore for you.
Well, first, there are a lot of people who have a dualism when it comes to music, in that, and for the longest time, and even there's remnants of this still for me today, that is still true, that there's a distinct difference between Christian and secular. But
I think in Jesus' book, in Jesus' mind, all of life is sacred.
Right.
There's not that split.
Exactly. In fact, I was wrestling with those thoughts my last few years at Moody, mm-hmm. and just sort of not. I wasn't a student there, but as an employee at Moody. And when I left and went to the new organization, which belongs to the Christian Reform Church, I had never grew up in that denomination or anything, but they put things in certain words that really was like, this is exactly where my soul is, but I couldn't put the words to it and kind of learn a little bit more about Kuiper and his thoughts about, every inch on the earth belongs to God.
Yes.
And he is in the process of redeeming it all. For the betterment of my faith, I was able to sort of see that there isn't this great distinction, duality. However, I was stuck in a position where I wanted to launch a new radio show, this under the radar thing.
Yeah.
And it obviously was going to air mostly on Christian radio stations. And a lot of these Christian radio stations are going to have that old mindset. So am I going to be able to play a Bruce Springsteen song that has some really strong faith messaging behind it? Probably not, because of the same people that complained about what you played on Midday Connection.
Yes.
Like that was a real thing I had to wrestle with. And then my boss's boss,
okay.
the director of the organization, was having a conversation about movies. And he said, I asked somebody in an interview, they're interviewing for a new job, and he was actually reviewing movies, was going to be part of the job on a website. He said, what is the best Christian movie that's out there? Okay, that was the question that was posed, right?
Yeah, and of course, this is podcast, not television. I'm kind of gasping
you're
right now.
You're sort of fainting.
I am, because I've this is hard to say. I also feel like I'm walking a tightrope talking about this. Probably because, no one loves the negative emails.
But you'll like the answer.
Oh, good.
It goes in a different direction.
Oh, that's good. I'll just let you tell it, and I'll get into the muck.
The guy who was being interviewed stammered his way just like you were about to. And the boss interrupted him and said, no, you're wrong. There's no such thing as Christian movies.
Oh, yes. And you're right. That's a great answer.
And so he's telling the staff that he's like recapping this conversation, and I'm listening with like bated breath, like you're putting words to just things that have been in my soul that I haven't been able to fully wrestle with. And I'm automatically starting to connect this to Christian music.
Right.
He says, there's no such thing as Christian art. There's no such thing as Christian books. There's no such thing as Christian music. There is only art made from a Christian worldview. That is what defines it as quote unquote Christian. It's the person behind the art, the heart it's coming from.
And I would even venture to say beyond that, that because all people, whether they have come to any kind of relationship with Christ or not, are created in the image of God. We're all created in the image of God. And so we have, his fingerprints all over us. And so they're, even when something is not specifically created from a Christian worldview, there can be...
There's redemptive qualities to it.
Redemptive qualities,
yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
And that would go back to Kuiper, and that would go...
Right, there we go again.
But but it helped, that idea of worldview helped me to reshape my thoughts as far as this show goes that I'm producing. And so I do play only music made by Christian artists. And sometimes I have to kind of scour through interviews and stuff to find out if they are a believer. But I want the music to be from a Christian worldview.
Mainly
so that I can answer the question from the affiliate radio station who's complaining about, how could you let this song play on a Christian radio station? I've had that question come up a number of times.
I didn't hear anything about God.
God or Jesus.
The song.
But, well, it was a song about a mother singing to her daughter about her dreams for her life. How is that not a Christian experience? And hear this in a really kind of subtle way for myself and maybe for others, trying to maybe redefine what the word Christian music means and helping us to understand that music can cover the pantheon of life. And for me, if I'm hearing a fellow believer wrestle with the idea of doubt and sorrow and grief and pain and joy and victory and celebration, wrestling with all of that in their art, it helps me to walk through life and still have that soul connection to the music in a deeper way. So that's sort of, it's interesting that you brought that up, because that was definitely a part of those early years, the early development of the show.
Okay, so we're getting the idea of what you're going for and who you're going after to talk with and play music from on your podcast. Are you going after any particular musical genre, or do these folks tend to fall into a certain genre musically or not necessarily?
I would say a little bit of the latter, and by latter, maybe the middle thing you said, which is they sometimes kind of fall into a category. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily aim to play a certain style for the sake of our show being on, you know, a couple hundred affiliate stations. I'm careful not to like push the boundaries too much one way or the other, but
which you can do if you've got a whole album of music to draw from.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, you can pay attention to that. Yeah.
So, you know, and we can also just air podcast only episodes where we don't even release it to the radio stations.
Ah,
so we've done like all hip hop episodes.
Oh, interesting. But that hasn't gone.
And we
to
did
the...
all bluegrass episodes and we put those out as podcasts only, and just in case stations just were like,
didn't
what are they up to?
What's
going on over there? So, I guess the music that I'm looking for, that I want to feature, it kind of goes back to a story I heard from, there's a singer-songwriter named David Wilcox, who we've played a number of times on our show. And he told a story of, he was answering that same question with someone I think it was on an airplane, about what are you trying to do musically? What's your goal? And his answer was, I want to write music that people care about 50 years from now.
Mm.
And so that is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for people that are putting so much craft into their art that it will stand the test of time. And unfortunately, much of what you hear on the radio, and in almost any genre, much of what you hear on the radio is almost a cotton candy effect, where it feels good, it's danceable, it's maybe even like worshipful, but it kind of just dissolves quickly. And even when you revisit that song a couple years later, it already sounds dated. And because it used all the, whatever the trendiest production tools were at the moment. And those are fun at times. And I can appreciate even that style of music. But the core of what I'm after is, what are the songs that are going to stand the test of time? If someone listens to an Under the Radar episode 50 years from now, will this music matter?
Wow.
And I'm convinced it will.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of other, if you listen to what radio station XYZ is playing right now, 50 years from now, chances are most of the music that they're airing right now won't matter.
So there was this artist. I got her album from the record company, and I put it in my car. I started listening, and I listened over and over and over, and I still have it in my car, and I still pop it in regularly. So would this person have fallen into that under the radar category? Cindy Morgan.
Oh, absolutely.
Her latest project.
Her latest project, Bows and Arrows.
Bows and Arrows.
That's the exact thought I had when I listened to this album, was this is an album I could listen to 50 years. I could tell the first time I listened to it that I will be a whatever, a 80-year-old, 90-year-old man, and I could listen to this album and it will never lose the quality.
Yeah.
The lyrics are poignant yet
interesting.
Timeless.
That's helpful. Yeah.
It was done with instrumentation that is a very timeless quality to it.
And I guess I raised that particular project because number one, it came to my mind first, and it's an artist who has been, well, I guess she's never been really mainstream. She's been known in the larger Christian music
realm. I would say
realm.
She had a mainstream career. I mean, she was very popular in the 90s.
Okay.
In Christian radio.
But I guess I raise her to say that probably the majority of folks that you talk with and play songs from are less than household names.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would that be, that's true.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we're not necessarily opposed to folks that, you know, Cindy Morgan or
Andrew
John
Peterson,
Foreman from Switchfoot
yes,
or Andrew Peterson, you know,
Sarah Groves.
We love playing their music because they are doing well-crafted music. It deserves to be heard
in
the same conversation. But we also want to find the artists that are underappreciated, and maybe even a lot of folks haven't discovered them yet. And we would love to be a source of discovery to say, well, if you love Cindy Morgan's latest project, and if you love Sarah Groves' music, then you're also probably going to really love Melody Olson. Do you know Melody Olson? Well, we'll be happy to introduce you to her, you know, just as an example.
Yeah. Hey, so let me ask you this question. I don't know if you can answer or not.
Bring it on.
Here I come. So over your years of doing the Under the Radar podcast, who do you think was like the best kept secret that you discovered and thought, oh, people have to hear this music? I know that's kind of a personal taste thing maybe also. I don't know, but somebody that you did an interview with and down the road. Well, you mentioned the Grey Havens. You were the person that did the first interview with them. Maybe it's been just that, and then different people have built from there. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's really hard to say just because, you know, some people were just on an upward trajectory.
Sure. When they intersected with you.
And we just happened to kind of be on the earlier side of that.
Or who's a best kept secret that's, you know, not a big name out there, but you talk to regularly or come back to, and people just love them when they hear them and see them, and you're like, oh, this person needs to be better known. Or maybe that's a whole handful of people, a whole bunch of people.
It is.
In your realm, right?
It is, totally, yeah. One of the guys that I think we've interviewed the most on the show, just kind of come back to on the regular, is Eric Peters.
That's what I was thinking.
And you,
I was thinking about him.
Yeah, I even brought him to the Midday Connection Studios many years ago, but we found his music kind of in the really early days of Under the Radar. We found him through Andrew Peterson. Mm-hmm. He, you know, Andrew is very generous as far as
he's been a great on-ramp to some of those folks, right?
Yeah. And Eric is one of these guys who, it's very fair to call him a best-kept secret because I think, you know, he still plays a lot of living room concerts, some small churches, things like that. And yet, lyrically and poetically and even musically, is on the caliber. And I know this sounds cliche, but he's in the category of like a Bob Dylan.
Mm,
you know,
wow.
Someone who, Johnny Cash, someone who just like, I feel like the world could really, definitely the world needs Eric Peters in it and Eric Peters' music in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
There are several artists just like that, we could easily plant a flag in and say, oh, you know, and that's kind of what we do.
Yeah.
It's just sort of try to kind of champion some of these artists and say, you know, to the best that we can do, we're going to stand on the rooftops and shout out about this artist that hopefully you will be blessed by, because if for nothing else, even if they're not your style, you can appreciate their artisanship.
Yeah. All right. I'm asking this solely for my son, John, who listens to the podcast, which that alone is no small feat for a 23-year-old to listen to his mom's podcast.
Yeah.
So his favorite genre is metal.
Yeah.
Which it still baffles me. But anyway.
Yeah.
But I've listened. Though he might say his all-time favorite band is Paramore.
Uh-huh.
He loved Lacey Sturm. What was the name of that band? It's going to escape me, and John will beat me over the head later. Anyway, recently, what did he send me? He sent me a link to Under Oath, something to listen to. Not everything has been like head banging. You know, there obviously there's some slower tunes, but do you ever interview any metal folks?
No, never.
I knew the answer, but I had to ask.
It's only just because I'm not even ruling out the idea that that might happen one day, but just with the show the way it is, with it being a syndicated radio program as well as a podcast,
can't do it.
It just isn't in the cards for right now.
It would have to be a standalone, like your bluegrass, yeah. Like your, you know, something like that.
I think that we're moving that direction. I think that we probably are going to do a lot more in the podcast world and a lot less in the radio world, kind of moving forward. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of a on the trajectory thing.
Sure.
So it might open up more possibilities for us to cover more genres.
Yeah. Well, I find what you do fascinating. What's the favorite part of what you do? I mean, because really you're a business owner now too. You know, you are under the radar.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But what do you love about what it is that you do? And also I want you to mention this special annual event also.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That you guys at Under the Radar put on.
I think my favorite thing is definitely when I hear from listeners or artists who just have had something magical happen because of our ministry and the way God has used it. And by magical, I mean something in their soul has sparked a light has been turned on because they discovered a certain artist or because we played a certain song or because we were able to do an event for an artist that would have never happened if we weren't involved. So I look at some of the pieces and go, I think we're all questioning why we belong in this world and what's like God's purpose for our lives. I think even those of us with a distinct calling still question that. And so there's something very rewarding about, okay, God, you are still there. You're still asking me to do this. And you just showed me some fruit of that labor. And there's nothing more rewarding than that.
It's pretty exciting, isn't it? Yeah. You know, I'm also thinking, and I've not asked you about this, but I'm thinking about your place in the lives of so many of these folks that you have maybe in some ways even been a lifeline to, given them a bit of a platform to a larger audience, because the music world and the traditional music industry and, you know, that whole thing is very different today than it was 20 years ago, for sure, maybe even 10. I don't know when the major shift happened. And some of that is because of iTunes. Some of that's, you know, you can list off what that's all about way better than I can, but it has deeply impacted artists everywhere.
It's still happening. I mean, the shift, the music industry shift is happening just on a year by year basis. So many unusual changes. And I don't know if this is kind of a tangent to that topic, but so one of my favorite interviews of all time was a couple of times I was able to sit down with Josh Garrels. He's an independent songwriter, probably on the more popular side of independent music, out of Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I was able to sit down with him and I asked him, I thought I kind of knew the answer, but I was like, just for the sake of the audience, the question that comes up all the time is like, why is a guy like you with so much talent not on a record label? So I'm begging and borrowing from his answer, but it really shaped and helped me understand kind of culturally what's happening. And his answer basically was, industry is not a bad thing. Industry is there for a reason. There's a steel industry, there's a school industry, there's a paper industry, there's whatever,
grocery industry, whatever. Yeah.
There's all sorts of industry and it's there for quality control, right? That's one of the main reasons why the industry is there. The music industry was also a quality control standard when you start looking at the industry 30, 40, 50 years ago. If you were not on a record label in 1985, it probably meant you were lesser quality than, you know, if you couldn't get a record deal. There wasn't a flourishing independent market back then. But what's happened is because of a whole lot of reasons, the industry is imploding. It's shrinking rapidly. And in the Christian music industry, even more so. It's why when you turn on a Christian radio station, and I don't have to pinpoint, I can say those words. The reason why I can say those words and not give call letters is because it's happening in every city in the United States. When you turn on your local Christian radio station that plays music, Why do all the songs sound the same? Why do they play the same song over and over and over again? Why is this becoming like a repeated cycle? Well, it's because of this industry collapse that's happening. And as the industry is trying to protect what's left of it, what's inside, all of a sudden the really good, nourishing, flourishing art is happening outside the industry. And for the first time ever in the music industry world, those walls of quality control mean nothing to anyone anymore, because the really good, rich stuff can be found outside of those industry walls.
But can they not crack the code to get in and be played on these stations?
Most likely no, because the walls are thick, and the walls are being, you know, when a church goes through some crises and starts to shrink, what happens to that church? They usually start building walls to protect, to try to keep the people who are left inside the walls. They're not thinking about the outside world. And so what's happened is that industry is building protective walls and making it harder for someone like the Grey Havens to get played on a regular Christian radio station.
What's got to change?
I'll tell you the fastest thing that has to change. Testing. The idea of music testing is what has ruined Christian radio. Sorry, Christian radio, if you're listening. You have been ruined by testing. Okay, so folks out there are saying, yes. What's is testing? Music yeah. testing? Yeah. You might have heard the phrase Becky, right?
Yes.
Becky is the target Christian radio listener. They've given her all these stats. I think she's like 38 years old, a soccer mom. She has 2.5 kids. She drives a minivan. It's just this, they just kind of put this picture on Becky. And they find a bunch of Beckys and put them in a room and play usually 10 to 15 seconds of a song.
Which, can I just say, that really kills my sensibility of diversity and desire to, you know, have the church look a lot different than it does in some places and all
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah. And what's happening is so it's not these Becky's fault, but they're put in, they're put in this room, given a lever to say yes or no. They're played 10 seconds of a song. They're told, pick yes or no. Did it connect with you? Yes or no? So what's happening is you'll have their target audience, Christian Radio's target audience, listening to 10 seconds of a intro, or it could be the middle of a song, clicking yes or no. Oh, guess what? All the music starts to sound the same because these Beckys want to hear certain words and certain language and certain production and certain quality and certain style. And where are the Sarah Groves of the world? Are they being played on Christian radio? Where's Andrew Peterson? No, they're not being played on Christian radio because they're storytellers. And you have to live the life of that song.
I didn't even know they weren't being played, really.
Oh, no.
Did not know that.
In fact, probably the only songs that those artists are getting on the radio are probably the old songs that were charting back in the day.
Wow.
And it's not true in every single case. You know, Dancing in the Minefields, it broke the top 10. You know, there's these anomalies.
Right.
But you can't really look at a major trend and just pick out the anomalies. Mm-hmm. The major trend is that there's this homogenous sound to Christian radio. And there's also this thing called a 10-second rule that gets talked about at Christian radio conferences, where they want, you know, if you land in an airport in any city and start flipping through the dial, they want you to be able in 10 seconds or less to know that you've landed on the Christian radio station. So what does this mean? They're fostering this homogenous sound. And so as an artist, you're stuck. Either you might have some artistic integrity and want to be creative and think outside the box and do some unique things, and that means you're probably not going to get played and you're going to have to scratch and claw to find an audience, or you compromise your sound a bit or make some production choices to give you a little more of that sheen and that polish that they're looking for, and in hopes that some of that compromise will lead you into that avenue of getting played on radio. So, I mean,
One of the reasons I'm talking to you today is this very thing.
Yes.
Because my guess is most of the people listening to the podcast today and hearing you talk aren't even aware of this other group of artists that exists out there. And so I really wanted to introduce them to Under the Radar and what you're doing, and in turn, hopefully, you know, introduce them through you to a lot of these great artists that you interview week in and week out, and they can hear a bit of their music there.
If really the show started because that was my story. I mean, I grew up listening to Christian music, the Michael W. Smiths and Stephen Curtis Chapman's and DC Talks of the World. Mm-hmm. And I was really into it. And I grew spiritually because of it. I had a soul connection to that music, as commercial and polished and as it was. Mm-hmm. I had a soul connection to it. And then as I got into radio, it was partly because of that soul connection that I had to music.
Sure.
I remember in some of my earlier days of Christian radio, this was not the case. Like you would listen. I remember some of the playlists that we would, you know, just as an announcer would be playing on the air, and you'd have your standard, you know, who are your A-listers, your Newsboys and your DC Talks and Stephen Curtis Chapman. And then you would follow one of those with Charlie Peacock, and you'd follow that with The Waiting, and then you'd go back to one of your A-listers. Then you'd have Satellite Soul and, you know, PFR, and just this like diverse sound to what Christian radio was. And not only diverse sound, diverse things that were being explored. Mm. All the songs didn't say, God is big, God is huge, God's got a blessing for me. They didn't all say that. They wrestled with fear and doubt.
Well, they made you think. Yeah, thank you. Thoughtful lyrics that kept you ruminating on a particular thought throughout the day.
So I find myself, fast forward a few years, going, asking myself, why am I less and less inclined to listen to the radio? And I couldn't even, I didn't even know the answer. Now in hindsight, I can explain some of these reasons. But then it was just, all I felt was a loss of soul connection. Mm. And I didn't know why. And then I started to discover some of this music outside of this industry and some of the things that were being produced that were blowing my mind, going, this is speaking to my soul in a fresh way, a new way.
Yes.
It's rubber meets the road in my life kind of stuff that I desperately need. And now when I talk to Under the Radar listeners, that's the number one thing that they say, that that they themselves went through that moment of they had kind of given up hope. Some of them had given up hope on listening to music altogether.
Wow.
Some of them said, I just went 100% to talk radio because I can't even figure out why I just dislike the music that I used to like.
Well, before we end here, wrap things up today, you got to tell folks about Escape to the Lake.
So we kind of took this community of listeners and artists, and for a few years I had this idea of getting them together to do something, and I couldn't figure out what that was. Would that be like a one-day folk festival, or I just didn't know. And so finally it all came together about 4 years ago, and we had our first Escape to the Lake, which is basically summer camp meets music festival meets getaway retreat.
That's great.
We kind of put it all together in that. So we actually take what would be like the Christian music festival and kind of flip it on its head. So you don't have to sleep in tents.
Nice.
You don't have to, you know, jump in the mud.
Nice.
We try to create a nice, intimate, relaxing atmosphere for, you know, a couple hundred people to get together with about 20 or so artists, and you get to know artists you've never discovered before. You get to eat meals with them. There's no green room, no backstage. You just kind of, it's like a VIP experience
for everybody.
For everybody. For
that's great.
The artists themselves get to connect with other artists in a way that they haven't. And in fact, I was talking to one of our favorite songwriters, Krista Wells, and she said, I started to count the number of relationship connections that happened with artists and the number of songs that were birthed even since just last year's Escape to the Lake. And she's like, I had to stop counting.
Wow.
It just went on and on and on.
So, two things. The dates of this year's conference and are there openings still for people that might be interested?
Yeah, definitely. So August 8th through the 11th is this year's Escape to the Lake. It happens in Northwest Indiana, in Cedar Lake, Indiana. And there are still openings. In fact, we even on our website, if folks go to our website, we posted a link there, not only for, there's like a little secret promo code if you want to save money on a registration, kind of like a procrastinator nice. Special.
Yeah.
But we also have even a more generous discount if folks want to come as part of a group.
Okay.
Like if you have a little Bible study, or it doesn't even have to be a big group, but you know, if you have a group of 10 people, let's say, that, you know, part of a church or your coworkers or whatever, and you're looking for just a few days to get away and come enjoy some music, enjoy some fellowship, enjoy the community. You don't have to be a fan of these artists. You don't have to even, there's some folks that come that don't even like music. But there is a spiritual soul thing that's happening that they walk away feeling 100% refreshed.
And so
it's really something that's for everyone. I just want to, you know, let folks know that it's not just for folks that are independent music fans, but it's literally the best thing that I have ever done in my career.
Well, and just to let everyone know, you can find out more at radarradio.net. If you're driving around as you're listening to the podcast, you can always go to my website, anitalustria.com, and I'll have the links right there on my homepage, and you can check it out there. Wow, Dave, lots of great stuff to talk about today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is so fun.
Really, really appreciate it. And with that, I will say I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.